are Voice America Business.
This broadcast is for information purposes only and should not be regarded as a recommendation or an offer to sell or solicitation of an offer to buy securities or investments mentioned herein. This broadcast is the opinion of Jordan Kimmel. At the time of this broadcast, a member of Mr. Kimmel's household owns shares of the company discussed in this program. Additional information on topics discussed herein available upon request.
This is Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Profitable Investing is a show that will take you through the ever-changing world of investing for a profit. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And folks, welcome back to Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And if I didn't have such excellent guests lined up for today, folks, I'd take the full hour because this market needs a lot of attention. The folks out there need a lot of attention, and but we do have some excellent guests lined up, and one of them is going to talk about a subject, the author of Super Crunchers. What a fantastic book, all about using numbers to kind of get away from the touchy, feely type thing of the world. So we're going to bring on the author, Ian Irais. I got to make sure I get his name right. And we're also going to bring on David Nauer later on, a social networking strategist, not something I get much involved in. Hey, so my Relationship Economics, his new book, I got to get a copy of that, as I just do love to read. But let me share with you, folks, I can't believe it's only the second of the month, and it already feels like we've been spin-dried for a decade in this month already. But I was over at CNBC on Monday, actually. Very interesting day to be down there. As you all know, it was a record-setting point drop, although it wasn't a percentage loss record, but 777 is a number a lot of people will be able to remember for a long time coming, and that is unless that record point drop gets eclipsed anytime soon. Not sure that it will. I don't think that it will, but the point here is that what I got to show even on a webinar yesterday, and if you haven't signed up for our webinars, folks, you're doing yourself a little bit of a disservice. We're able to really cover a lot of ground and show some point and figure, show some PowerPoint that I think is essential to really understand what's going on. But really, it comes down to this simple, and this is what I said on Monday. Then you see the record, 500 points up in a given day the following day. Well, there's something called the VIX, which is the VIX, the Volatility Index. And it's a very simple thing to understand. It's something we can't calculate. We're just given the VIX every given day. And what it comes down to is the lower the VIX, the more complacent the individual is, the more confident the market is, the less volatile it is, and the more dangerous it becomes as you begin, again, not to worry about a shark attack, because there wasn't a shark attack in 30 years. So the VIX index goes very, very low. You get complacent. Everyone puts their money in. And obviously, it's the inverse. When the VIX index is high, it usually represents maximum type pessimism. It represents a period where there's a lot of uncertainty and there's no confidence in the marketplace. And yet, you'd know it, on Monday, the VIX had a closing record high, higher than the period after the market opened after 9/11, higher than any recorded period except the day of October 87, where the market lost 22%. We can go back for 20-plus years. The five highest reading on the VIXs all represent a point where you had to hold your nose, close your eyes, absolutely abandon the fear you're feeling, and get invested. And it's so hard to do, and this is what I'm recommending, but the point is, you can't buy anything. It's not a matter of just buying stock. It's a matter of actually knowing what you're buying and being very selective. And then after you bought and after you're invested, you have to remain just as diligent, just as careful, because the market is absolutely treacherous with the volatility of indexes and sectors it's rotating through. Now, for months, I had been telling you that the only area that we were finding, and we were finding a great deal of it, a lot of safety, a lot of not only safety, but returns in this whole global build-out complex, this anything to do with agricultural, anything to do with energy, international construction, and the story was a very easy story to understand. It was all about people living better, eating better, the American dream spreading a little bit. Well, somebody put something in the water, folks, because these stocks started to break down a couple of months ago, and now you're seeing earnings come out with record earnings, absolutely tremendous cash flow, and these companies are literally being destroyed. And I'm talking about opportunity being created. But I will also tell you, it doesn't feel like an opportunity when someone's taking a hammer to your head and striking it repeatedly. It just doesn't really feel right. It doesn't feel like an opportunity. And frankly, it's not. Okay, so what happens here, we talked about using stop losses. We talked about using a lack of ego. And the point is, stocks will often break down before the news gets bad. Somehow they magically start to turn up when the news is actually terrible. And people say, well, how's this market rallying? This doesn't make sense. Well, the market actually looks forward, and at the moment, the market does not like what it sees. Okay? It has nothing, in my opinion, to do with this bailout. Again, it comes down to deception, or I call it simply misdirection. And I think there's a lot of people out there who feel, well, all we have to do is kind of have this bill passed and this little rescue package, and then we can set sail again. And the reality is the market is saying something different. I'm going to say this for the first time. I've said it because I haven't wanted to say it. The other day, one of the only stocks to hit a 52-week high was a tiny little biotech company that specializes in the antidote or the whatever you call it for anthrax. So this market sounds and feels and acts like it's ready to get gassed here. We're off another 3%. It's opposite day here again. Every day seems the opposite of the day before. So you really can't get a feeling based on technical, based on fundamental. All that you can tell, and it's very easy to tell and very obvious to tell, is the market is under liquidation, probably of some very significantly large funds. There's a liquidity issue, and as stocks get more illiquid, this is what's called a period where they just make them throw up. Part of me wants to be on the screen. I don't trade as actively as some others. I probably belong more on my screen than I do on the show right now. But what we're doing is we're taking very defensive measures to simply get stopped out where it's appropriate, to hold what continues to actually act okay. And somehow, believe it or not, there's a couple of things on our screen that rank up very, very high that are hitting 52-week and, frankly, all-time highs. The fact is they look like grandma's teeth, you know, very few and very far between right now. So I can laugh at myself here, but this is a devastating marketplace. This is probably one of the more dangerous markets. So a psychologist or a Zen specialist will say, well, you know, crisis represents opportunity, and the only thing you have to do is have money on the sidelines to take advantage of the opportunity when it really presents itself. So what we have been saying very consistently is I would not expect this market, I'd not be surprised to see the market break 10,000. The fact is, when it gets there, I don't believe it's going to stay there very long. I think what we're setting ourselves up for is the big climactic belly flop, the thing that finally puts the bear on the cover of Time magazine, the thing that creates a little bit of brown in people's underwear, and the next thing you know, a new bull market has resumed. So what we're recommending to people right now is if you're sitting on cash, put 30% of it to work. Maybe we're going to get an opportunity to put another 30% to work at a lower price. But I will tell you, in 2 or 3 years from now, it's my anticipation that you're going to look back at this period and you're going to remember Jordan talking about a record level on the VIX. You're going to hear him talking about record levels of cash relative to the stock market sitting at an all-time record high. So the truth is, not everyone has lost all their money. It's quite the opposite. There's more cash on the sidelines. Corporations outside the financial industry, that is, are sitting on a record amount of cash. I don't think it's lost on too many market observers that Warren Buffett, who 2 years ago said he just couldn't find anything to buy, so he was allowing billions of dollars to accumulate in his portfolio. Where was he getting it? Through the companies that are actually generating cash. And he sat on the money, and right as, you know, I don't mean to be too graphic, but right as puke time hits the stock market, well, that's exactly where you see Warren Buffett putting his money to work, acting nice and calm, nice and collected, allowing opportunities to come to him. But when you get a big, fat, slow pitch over the center of the plate, folks, you can't sit there and wait for the next one. So he's swinging here. He's swinging slowly, carefully, deliberately, but you have to understand that the single best investor of our generation is putting money to work while the public is sitting there staring with their mouth wide open. Very, very important concept. Now, the other thing, just very quickly, that I wanted to talk about is that when I walked out of the stock market, the stock exchange on Monday down at CNBC, and if you haven't seen that clip yet, go to magnetinvesting.com and click under media or give us a call. We could show you where the link is. And there was a camera crew, the likes that I haven't seen since October 87, asking, is this the end of America as we know it? Is this the end of democracy as we know it? I mean, the fear was raging so high that anyone with any experience says, listen, you just have to have a cool head. You have to relax here. You can't sit here and let stocks plummet that you own. You have to be very careful. Use some self-discipline, because with that money, we're going to be able to go in and buy some gems very, very low. Now, the other hand, I will tell you, there are some companies out there which are so dominant in their sector and generating so much cash flow and clearly virtually own the market they operate in. I'm holding my nose and holding these stocks, and I am allowing a little bit of losses to accumulate, knowing that they snap back the fastest. So it's a very treacherous market. Don't let anybody tell you they have the answers. You have to look for the clues every day. That's the only way to go about it. You have to look for clues, pretend you don't have all the answers, and then keep adapting and just be patient and thoughtful. Now, what I want to do here, we're going to need to take a break here. We're going to have some terrific guests coming up. First one is David Naur from B1 Now, Relationship Economics. Let's find out what he's talking about. We're going to be right back following this quick break.
Oh.
Money. Up-to-date business and financial news. Money. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Magnet Investment Group, LLC, is based in Randolph, New Jersey, and is a registered investment advisory firm providing wealth management for individuals and institutions. Magnet's investment strategy combines aspects of growth, value, and momentum investing to achieve superior long-term risk-adjusted returns. The group applies their proprietary Magnet stock selection process to a variety of client-specified benchmarks and risk tolerance levels. The group is led by Jordan Kimmel with over 20 years' experience in the securities field.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, the Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, the Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, Voice America Business.
With thousands of homes destroyed or damaged by fire, lots of people are wondering what to do next. If you are a wildfire survivor, SoCalHelp.org can help you find support and decide what to do, right now, wherever you are. This easy-to-use website is a place you can go to get immediate help with food, shelter, and important medications, and start getting your life back on track. Get help now with insurance, legal issues, and find professional services like doctors and counselors. You can access contact information for national agencies, hotlines, and services that have the resources you need. You can also connect with other survivors and people who can help. For the answers and support you need to rebuild, visit SoCalHelp.org.
The Bottom Line in Business. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And folks, welcome back to Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And as promised, we really have some great guests lined up. None better here than David Naur. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. David, I read through your bio. I haven't actually received your book yet, which looks real interesting, but I think your background and your accomplishments are fantastic. The M in Magnet stands for management. It's all about the people running the organizations. Why don't you start with a little bit of your fantastic bio and history, and then we'll get up into your company, B1 Now, and your new book that's out.
Wow. Background and history, bio history. Originally from Iran, I came in 1981, didn't know anybody, and didn't really speak a word of English. I had $100 to my name, and you go through certainly some adversity trying to acclimate to this culture. But what I refer to in the book is really how to adapt to different audiences, different walks of life you come across, and really how to build and nurture relationships to get things done.
Right. Well, if anybody did it, it's you. I saw your history. I know there's only a limited amount of time. The Center for Puppetry Arts, the high-tech ministries. I mean, you've really been all around. But let's get into the subject of your book, and I know that there's more and more social networking sites online. I see emails, I'm getting invited into this, and this guy wants to be my friend. I actually haven't been all that active in it. Tell us what it's about and why people ought to get involved in it.
Sure. So social, I'm fairly active, and I talk about relationships. It's not a spectator sport, right? You know, the first chapter is all about why most networking doesn't work. One, because networking is one letter away from not working. Number two, it's haphazard. It's from seat of your pants. And whether it's offline, what you do in person when you attend functions, or online with tools like LinkedIn and Jigsaw and Plaxo and a bunch of the others, you have to have a purpose. You have to have a reason of why are you networking. What are you trying to get out of this need to belong and need to engage and interact with other people? And there really is a point of diminishing return when you get on multiple of these websites or you attend bunch of functions, and candidly, you don't have anything to show for it. So I ask people, what's your return on involvement? You keep going to these events, what do you have to show for it? What results? What progress?
Okay, well, so everyone's going there for a reason. They're probably going to increase their clients, increase their relationships, what it is. So give us the advice. Tell us what is your book telling folks to actually, how do you increase your yield or increase your output from it?
Great question. I interviewed 1,000 managers, directors, executives for the book. And without exception, everybody agrees that relationships are important. I couldn't find anybody to argue with that. But nobody measures it. Nobody quantifies it. Nobody says, I keep investing in these relationships. What's my return on that investment? So the book is all about how to be more systematic, how to be more disciplined. Now, what I'm not advocating is how to use people or how to manipulate people or how to, you know, even that everybody, you know, me, you should have a dollar sign stamped on their forehead. What I'm asking the readers to do and what they will see in the book is just a more systematic approach about not just what are you doing, but why, and how to invest in people for this extraordinary return, but you can't do that for everybody. So again, being much more disciplined in which relationships you choose to invest in.
Well, see, and I actually am asked to speak at a lot of conferences, a lot of investment conferences. My wife always bugs me, why are you bothering? Why are you bothering? I will tell you, I appear on television 5 times a month, CNBC and Fox, and I will tell you that I don't get a lot out of it. I do most of it to give back. But, you know, when I saw your bio and what it's all about, I said, maybe I could learn something from you. Maybe, without knowing me, maybe what am I doing wrong,
sure,
or what should I be doing differently?
Sure. So what you're doing is getting on Fox and doing a lot of the speaking. Again, that allows you to get your intellectual horsepower. That allows you to get your expertise out in the market. And you have to do that to create this marketing gravity, right? So I talk about it's better to be known for content than it is to be known. You have some content. When you speak, you share that content with others. The challenge is, are you leaving them with some kind of a call to action? Are you leaving them with an opportunity to then re-engage you to learn more? When you speak, when you share your content, if you tell people what, not the how, right, you leave this, especially if the content is worthwhile, you leave this innate human need to want to know more. So they'll seek you out, and then again, when you add value to every interaction, people want to hear from you. People want to get your emails. People want to, speak to you. When you speak and you share value with them, they want to take you home. Well, they can't take you, so what other resources do you have for them to take with you? And you start to build and nurture this relationship that's around adding high-value content to your high-value contacts.
Nice. I really think that is right on. And again, we're not looking really to build our business through this. The guys in my office who are actually, a lot of people contact us, a lot of people see us, and a lot, they want to join the Chamber of Commerce. Is that a good idea? What else should they really be doing?
Sure. Again, none of us have enough bandwidth to invest in all the relationships we want equally. So you have to get more astute in how do you prioritize which relationships you invest in. You have to start by getting out there. As I said, this is not a spectator sport. I belong to 14 to 16 different organizations. I can't attend all of their functions. But if you think about why people gather, they gather for content and they gather for community. What content can I get exposed to? What can I learn? How can I improve my current position, situation? And then who else is going to be there? Who else will I get a chance to meet? Now, chambers make a lot of sense if your business is local or regional. Chambers do not necessarily make as much sense if your business is perhaps international or certainly the most local chambers, right? So you have to, again, have a purpose, have a reason, align the reason you go and attend these events with where am I trying to do in my business, how am I trying to grow personally and professionally.
Right. Now, in your book, is there any sites that you recommend that people join or any kind of, things along those lines? Or
sure.
Is that not something that
we have researched. I'm assuming you're asking about social networking sites, perhaps?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have researched 400 different social networking sites in nine different categories, which business, by the way, is one of those. By far, the most prevalent professional social networking website is LinkedIn. I call the last chapter the LinkedIn effect, and it talks about how social online social networking is changing the basic tenets of business-to-business interaction. So I've been on LinkedIn for 5 years, and just a quick example for you and your listeners, I was recently in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, and I was able to schedule 14 meetings with senior vice presidents within 3 days, none of whom I'd ever spoken to before. Now, I did that through leveraging, never used, but leveraging my existing what I call relationship bank. But LinkedIn does the heavy lifting for you. If I tried to do that traditionally, it would have taken me months to send letters and faxes and emails and so on and so forth.
Of course. Of course. And so listen, there's a couple minutes left in the segment. What I want to do, I want to make sure, David, you get a chance. I'm sure you have your own website. If you want to show someone B1 Now, Inc., and then if there's any contact information, and of course, if there's anything I forgot to mention you think is a priority, I want you to just go ahead and share it.
Sure. So the best website for your listeners is actually relationshipeconomics, that's plural, .net. Again, relationshipeconomics.net. They can sign up for, there's over 200 articles on the website. They can sign up for our newsletter, which, by the way, isn't self-promotion. It's a lot of good techniques, tips, techniques, secrets on how to really become a lot more effective. The last thing I just want to quickly share with the audience is, again, there's a lot of books out there about networking. There's a lot of resources. This isn't it. This is really how to invest in people. This is how to be more systematic and disciplined so you'll create greater results for the effort, for the investments you're making in getting out there and trying to build and nurture relationships.
Right. No, I think that's beautiful. I'm guessing one of the ways is not to have six quick drinks and start wearing the chandeliers at functions, right?
That's probably very good advice, very smart advice.
Right. And so do you travel a lot still, or are you mostly domestic right now?
I do both. I do a great – I've done over 100 keynote speeches this past year, so I'm blessed to be able to meet a lot of really interesting people. Corporate clients are KPMG and Deloitte and Siemens, and I've done some work for Disney, but also a lot of smaller companies you've never heard of. Associations are also a great opportunity to really bring this message, which happens to be very horizontal, into how do we, especially in, if you think of turbulent economic times or otherwise, talk about how relationships really are your biggest asset. So, yeah, it does take me domestic as well as I'm going to Asia-Pacific later this year and back to probably Europe early part of next year.
Right. Now, I personally believe that one of the most important things is not the quest for money, but actually doing something that you enjoy. Doing something you enjoy, people you enjoy being with. I was really interested. I saw, you know, you're a member of the Center for Puppetry Arts. Was really from a hand puppet there, right?
Yeah, I have two small kids, and what I'm passionate about performing arts and Center for Puppetry Arts in particular is that they really bring that enormous joy. I don't know about you, but my grandfather, he had a little puppet show that would show all the kids, and we just. To this day, I remember just this enormous amount of, again, innate joy that came out of just that opportunity to engage and bond with the family. And so they're by far the biggest such facility in the country, if not in the world. Enormous budgets and opportunities to really do some great. They do distance learning for different schools, and it's just a really good chance to give back to the community.
Right.
High Tech Prayer Breakfast is another
great
one. I've been a host for a number
balance,
of years. The Atlanta one is actually
you know
tomorrow morning.
So,
and
I appreciate
2000.
You coming on the show. Thanks so much. I'd love to get a copy of the book. I'd love to have you back on. You obviously have a handle on it, and I want to thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my pleasure. Folks, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back in a subject that really interests me as well, which is all about crunching the numbers to get where you're going. We all know Magnus Quantitative. We're going to bring on the author of Super Crunchers next. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Money, money. Up-to-date business and financial news. Money, money. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Everyone faces conflict at home, at work, in the community, in the world. This show is about how to fix those conflicts with practical tips and techniques. Doug Knoll brings to the internet airwaves the first of its kind, a show that teaches peaceful resolution to life's daily battles. That's Fix Your Conflicts, broadcasting live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Our team of investment professionals, supported by our quantitative magnet stock selection process, is committed to the goal of providing excess market returns to clients around the world. We target the fastest growing companies that are still trading at a discount to their intrinsic value. Companies in this category are likely to enjoy dynamic earnings growth. We call these companies magnets. They tend to simulate investor response and create powerful returns. The value-added benefit of magnets' quantitative analysis and portfolio management has been extraordinary. After ranking all eligible companies, we only buy less than the top 1% of the companies we monitor. The first step involves quantitative analysis of individual companies. Often special situation companies with a market niche are captured by our screening process. Our strategy is intended to take advantage of our global economy while achieving long-term capital appreciation.
I'm Paul Hopkins, CEO of Farmers Insurance, and a proud sponsor of March of Dimes' premier walking event, March for Babies, formerly known as Walk America. More babies begin healthy lives because of March of Dimes' research and programs. And with farmers' support, we can do even more for families all over America. One day, all babies will be born healthy, but we have to walk to get there. Join the March for Babies. Sign up at marchforbabies.org.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
Alrighty, folks, and welcome back to Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. It's really a pleasure to bring on Ian Ayers. I was walking through the airport looking for a book to read, came across Super Crunchers. What a great concept, what a great book, and what a great guy who's written it. Ian, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, and I read through your background a little bit. I think to me, and I'm not sure you'll know why yet until we get to talk, it's a fascinating subject to me, but I always want to bring out who we're talking to and why. Ian, if you wouldn't mind, just a little bit of your own background, and then we're going to get into the book and the content.
Sure. I'm an economist and a lawyer. I teach at Yale University, and I crunch numbers on all kinds of things from kidney transplantation to car sales. But I also do a lot of I teach corporate finance, and I do a lot of number crunching on stock returns.
Right. Well, let me just share with you, you know, we use a quantitative model to actually select stocks and manage portfolios. So when I saw your book, it's right up my alley. I think it's a fantastic subject. And I think that, let me just go right to one of the quotes I saw, you know, what Discover talked about. When statistics conflict with expert opinion, bet on the statistics.
That's right.
And I'd like you to just get into the fact that, you know, what we're able to do and the information that's actually available, we don't need the seat of our pants as much anymore.
Yeah, there have now been actually hundreds of studies that in a variety of different contexts where they run a contest between human decision makers and statistical algorithms. And time and time again, the statistical algorithms do as well or better. It's actually only about 6% of these studies that the humans do better, and that might just be, you know, 6% of the time is just might be random noise. The vast majority of studies, this goes to everything, including predicting how the Supreme Court is going to vote. It turns out a simple statistical algorithm does a better job.
Right, and this is incredible. I think partly in the stock market is because it's so emotional. People react to news and they get their emotions involved. I think that one of the things that, you know, there's an old expression, well, hey, you can get statistics to tell you anything, to tell any story. Tell us the difference between that kind of train of thought and the way you actually crunch the numbers to not justify a decision but to help make a decision.
Yeah, so it's very that's an excellent question. That it's fine to come in and to come up with a hunch, to have a hypothesis of what you think is going to turn it out, but that a good number cruncher then lets the data tell him whether the hunch is paying off or not, and really. Working, the best decision makers really go between their intuitions and the numbers, and then go back to the drawing board. Sometimes the numbers prove you right, but sometimes they not just prove you wrong, but that they'll lead you to see some new trend that you didn't see before.
Right, and so we're using a multi-factor model that we built, testing a hypothesis of actually what makes a great company, and then we use this algorithm to actually select stocks for us and then manage it. One of the things that happens is the market actually gets irrational, and people will say it's nearly impossible to stick with a model. You get your emotions all involved, and maybe can you touch on that at all? How do you override
that? To be a disciplined investor is really a quite important issue, and the emotions get involved not just in your choice of stocks initially, but in sticking to a plan. And they also come up, another dimension that I don't think it's emphasized enough. It's in trying to calculate the precision. How much confidence do you have in your hunch? And this is a thing where computers are much better than humans. So humans are damnably overconfident, so that we not only pick a stock, but then you say, well, how confident are you on it? Well, people have trouble coming up with a number to describe their confidence, but if they're forced to, they cling to their hunches too much. And one of the beautiful things about quantitative analysis and statistics is that the same process that gives rise to prediction, it simultaneously tells you how confident it is in that prediction. Sometimes you just don't have good data. It'll make a prediction, but it'll tell you that it's not a very accurate prediction. And it'll give you a wide confidence range. Other times it'll make a prediction and it'll be a very, very confident. The very procedure will give you tell you whether it had enough data to do it accurately or not.
Right, and I think that, people always talk about polls and they don't realize that a relatively small sample of a couple thousand people can really tell you what a few million people are thinking out there. I've actually never met, and this is really interesting, I deal with a lot of quants in this business, I've never met the combination of both a lawyer and a quant. It's remarkable. So I just actually got your book. I'm going to read through it. Tell us of a chapter that kind of where you talk about something where really nobody else does.
One of the things that I briefly mentioned before is this empirical study of Supreme Court decision making, which brings together my two loves of law and number crunching. And so,
right.
These researchers from Washington University in St. Louis, they had a very powerful test of whether humans could beat a statistical model, and they, in one corner, they picked 80 legal experts. These are people who many of them had clerked on the Supreme Court, and they said for an entire year, make a prediction of how you think the justices on the Supreme Court will vote on cases. And to make it even easier, you only had to make the prediction on cases that concern the area of the law that you're an expert in. So if you're a criminal lawyer, you had to make predictions of how they'd vote on the criminal cases, and you know, if you're a free speech lawyer, you'd have to make the free speech predictions. And in the other corner, instead of having humans, they had this statistical algorithm that was based on just six factors, and none of the factors were the specific issue in the case. And lo and behold, instead, those were factors like, did the case come out of California? And and the statistical algorithm did a better job of predicting the Supreme Court cases. And this, it's a, there's an important lesson here. These experts are real experts, but you see what humans do, they fall in love with little things that they put too much weight on. Whereas lawyers, every lawyer, knows that the Supreme Court hates California, or they hate the judges in California,
okay.
And they're more likely to overturn cases coming out of the Ninth Circuit. And lawyers know that, but when we start to make decisions, we don't put enough weight on that, on the simple thing. And actually, the more subtle the decision-making process, and this includes choosing stocks, it's often that the statistical algorithm is going to do a better job because it's going to put the right weights on the big factors.
Right. No, real clear, and it's a really great point. And I think that, again, it comes down to the human with the human emotion and the overconfidence. And then often they paint themselves into a corner and don't allow, say, new facts to influence them because of their ego. They can't get out of that corner. I'm curious if you're actually managing a portfolio, and if you're doing it quantitatively, or you're doing it off the seat of your pants?
Well, I try to do it quantitatively, but the biggest thing that I'm working on now is trying to come up with portfolios that diversify better, and that we have pretty good instruments out there to diversify across assets, and I'm trying to use quantitative analysis to diversify better across time, and so that's
across time. Interesting.
And I tell you the number of Excel files and statistical regressions that are around my office right now is many.
Right, I can imagine. Yale also has a great track record in managing their own endowments. They could probably use your help. In just a couple minutes we have left, Ian, we'll go over again. It's Super Crunchers is your book, but I know you have other books out there previously. We all can't come to your lectures, but if they want to know more about you and your books, why don't you share maybe some contact or some website where they could learn more about your other books as well?
Yeah, if you go to supercrunchers.com, I actually have a prediction tools that I have put up there, and there are now, I think, 30 or 40 prediction tools, and you can start super crunching yourself. If you put in a little bit of data about something you care about, this will make more accurate predictions. Actually, if you're pregnant and you put it'll make some more accurate predictions about when your actual due date will be. Or you can make, if you're writing a book, there's actually a quantitative algorithm where you can put in different, the book title and a few pieces of information, and it'll give you a rating on its bestseller likelihood. Just, of course, not from the, this is to the extent that you can tell books by its cover. So
well,
it's a lot of fun.
And
these go everything from sports, even some financial
about.
Ones that, even you can see a quantitative Ray Fair has an interesting algorithm to make that's been making predictions about which party will be take the presidency. So
right.
Supercrunchers.com.
Are you willing to guess and tell us right now?
Right now, the prediction is saying that it's a 65% chance of a Democratic president next.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to see. Time will tell. Things can change. But, Ian, I really appreciate you coming on. I will tell you, I'm going to read this cover to cover, and I'm also going to go on to supercrunchers.com. I want to see that algorithm you have. And I just completed a book. I'm going to go in and see what your algorithm says about our title. Maybe we can change it before it hits the stores.
Excellent.
Right, but listen, really a pleasure to have you. I think your students are lucky, and thanks for taking the time out of your day to join us.
My pleasure, thanks.
All right, folks, we need to take a quick break here. That's what the music's about. It's commercial. After this quick break, and stick with us, we have some important things to wrap up here, and we have one heck of a market. I want to delve into it a little bit closer.
Stocks, bonds, 401ks, investments, refinancing. We can help you. Call now toll free. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now. Brought to you by Waste Management. Every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Magnet Investment Group, LLC, is based in Randolph, New Jersey, and is a registered investment advisory firm providing wealth management for individuals and institutions. Magnet's investment strategy combines aspects of growth, value, and momentum investing to achieve superior long-term risk-adjusted returns. The group applies their proprietary Magnet stock selection process to a variety of client-specified benchmarks and risk tolerance levels. The group is led by Jordan Kimmel with over 20 years' experience in the securities field.
Is your job heavenly or closer to hell on earth? Maybe it's time you stop waiting on employers to make you satisfied and learn how to recognize your own career contentment. Jeff Garten and his expert guests show you how every Thursday at 12 noon Pacific when you tune into Career Contentment Radio on the Voice America Business Radio Network. Contentment is yours to control and easier to achieve than happiness or satisfaction.
Sell, buy, sell. All we talk about is money. Talk to an expert. Call now. Call now. Toll free 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And folks, welcome back to Profitable Investing. And let me just say that these are two guests again. I wanted to go the whole show. There's so much to cover in the market, but these are two of the most successful guys in their whole business. When I saw Super Crunchers on the shelf, it obviously fascinated me. Now, one of the interesting things I was trying to bring out in the subject is we had a gentleman named Joel Greenblatt on the show who wrote a bestseller, manages a large portfolio based on a quantitative theory, and he basically laid it out in a book. And he said, I'm willing to do this because you're not going to be able to do it yourself. The second something goes wrong, whether it's over a week, a month, a quarter, or a year, even 2 years, you are going to abandon the process and go about doing it your own way again. And what is so interesting, and again, I just completed my book. We sent it in to Wiley yesterday. They'll go through the first edit. We'll add some charts. We're going to add, in fact, the top 20 current Magnet top-ranked stocks. We'll give everyone a chance to see them and do their own research on them. But the fact is, in the book, I talk about a couple things that process is so much more important than actually any measurement of short-term return, even 3 or 5 years. And again, in the book, and not to tease anybody, this is an incredibly difficult business. I wish everybody the very best, and I never want to laugh at anybody's problems. They showed in Barron's magazine the number one return over the last 3 and 5 year periods as of the end of June this year. Well, the fund happened to be a large cap fund specializing in Russian securities. So if you were a milkman or a working the counter at Walmart, had you actually been charged with only investing in large cap Russian securities, it would be, you might have had the same exact return. Now, since that period, since the ink dried, and before the ink dried on that article, because it all takes time to research and put out, the fund was already down some 40% for the year, and at this point is down in excess, I believe, a 50-some-odd percent for the year. Now, again, not that the portfolio manager wasn't smart since June of this year. Again, he's charged with investing in large-cap Russia. Well, we've seen a huge sell-off in oil, and we saw the invasion to Georgia. We saw the market actually shut down by their government because it was going down too fast. They actually turned and shut the market down. So again, what was the process behind his stock selection and returns? And what you'll find is right now what I've done is some of the guys profiled in my book with the best process, the best long-term returns over the last 10 years are actually all down in excess of 35% for this year. Well, you say, how could they be good money managers? How is that actually possible? Well, one of the things I like to show you in on this show for years has been the Investors Daily. And while the NASDAQ and the S&P and the Dow are down around 22-23%, yes, folks, this is a bear market, the sub-list that IBD comes out with, called the 85-85 list, meaning quantitatively their earnings were better than 85% of companies and their relative strength or stock performance has been better than 85% of companies. So this is a very elite list of companies. Well, that list of companies is down now for the year close to 40%, somewhere in the level around 38-39% for the year. So that's just an indication, folks, how tough this market has been, how actually emotional this market has been. We've gone from this concept that the dollar is crashing, get out of the dollar, into there hasn't been a discussion about the dollar in the media now for weeks or months. Now the question is, it turned to oil, and oil was going up and up, and oil would never stop going up, and when will we see $200 oil and up and oil and oil and oil, and then the next thing you know, well, you got it. Oil is now down around $95. What kind of percent is that? Down 35%. The oil stocks, some of them are down 40 and 50% already. So now what we're saying is no one's going to drive around. No one needs any oil. And just as interestingly, just as importantly, some of the alternative energy companies and some of these companies, which clearly are the future, are just being dismantled and sold as if that they were rags or companies that generated no revenue. These are companies with actually record backlogs and record sales. And I will tell you unequivocally, and we'll see if I'm right or wrong, you will be hearing within the next month of Warren Buffett stepping in and buying some energy plays, some coal plays, maybe something in the transportation index. And this is the way money is made. It's made when you follow the cash and then are willing to act when the public is choking on themselves. And this is probably the single highest emotional level that I can remember. Again, it's not even my measurement. Let's go back to Ian Ayers for a second. This was quantitatively measured by the VIX, which closed at a high this given Monday. So what I could tell you, and in this business, we can't use that long word that starts with a G, and I'm not going to even tell you what it is. I don't use the word anymore. But I could pretty much tell you in the middle of the night, when it's very, very dark and it looks like there'll never be light again, well, I could pretty much assure you that that sun will start peeking up sometime around dawn, and the next thing you know, it will be light out. And the market works with cycles. The most important thing that you can do is not only make sure you buy the right things, but if there's one simple thing you can do is to simply try to put your pulse on the market itself and ask yourself, is the public acting greedy and very enthusiastic and acting as if, well, they can't buy enough, they can't get enough of this stuff? Well, if that's the case, I urge you to keep some powder dry, to take some profits along the way, and to kind of wait out some opportunities. On the other hand, if you sense that the public is in sheer panic and is actually running for the hills, and we did see people piling into treasuries last week with a zero, that's right, a 0% yield. The yield has now gone all the way up to 0.7%, and that's what's being called the safe money at the moment. So people are piling into U.S. treasuries with a yield of below 1%. Only to turn around in a year or two from now and say, what in the world was I thinking? What was I doing? Well, that doesn't mean you go and buy everything and anything. What we're doing here right now, the pulse is clearly on the most elite set of companies that are doing something remarkable, generating cash and accelerating revenue in this environment. And, folks, if you could do it here, as they say in the song, you can do it anywhere. This is what you need to do, is you need to focus on long term. If you feel like me, a little sick to your stomach right now and sick of the market and sick of stocks, belly up and put some money in and get yourself dollar cost averaging in. Our fund is down this year like everyone else's, and this is the time when you go in, you hold your nose, you give us a call, and you put 30% of your liquid assets in. So, magnetinvesting.com, 888-766-6828, folks. Use these opportunities. Warren Buffett is invest like Buffett, folks. Get your money in while people are scared. Have a great week ahead. Enjoy the fall, and we'll be right here next week, same time, same place. See you on Voice America Business next week. Have a great week ahead, and hold your nose and buy something here, folks. Buy it. See you later.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Tune in for another exciting hour of profitable investing right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.